Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is freelance writer and author Rachel Dickinson. Dickinson writes about science, nature, and environmental issues. She is the author of Falconer on the Edge, A Man, His Birds, and the Vanishing Landscape of the American West. And her most recent is The Notorious Reno Gang, the wild story of the West's first brotherhood of thieves, assassins, and train robbers. But today we're going to discuss Dickinson's venture into watercolor painting, which she began to seriously pursue, I would say, about 15 months ago. And welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Now, obviously you're a successful writer and have been for many years. So what was it that made you segue into something like this?
I think it was actually two events. The first event was something that had never happened to me before. I went into a full stop with my writing. I found that I couldn't do a thing. I would sit there and I would look at the screen and just think, I would start to panic and think, is this the way it's always going to be?
Wow.
And then a friend of mine who meets me at the local diner on Wednesday mornings with my aunts, she has been a watercolorist for many years, and she's part of a little watercolor group in Groton. And they take these trips to various places that's run by the instructor, David Beale. And so they had a trip coming up to Ireland, and there were still spaces. And so I decided to go, pulled my pennies together, and I went to Ireland with this group of watercolorists, and I literally had never held a brush before. I brought no supplies because I didn't know what I was supposed to bring. And I was with people who had been painting for years, many of them. Fortunately, we were staying on a farm that had a studio building across the way, and it was all set up for groups who wanted to do watercolor and painting. So they had all the supplies there. So I began doing watercolor with borrowed supplies in a foreign country.
Wow, that is an amazing story. Now, I find your paintings really wonderful already. It seems like you've been studying longer. But do you think you'd know if it wasn't working and visually it wouldn't be particularly attractive to onlookers or not?
When I started, and I think this is the experience that most people have when they start a visual medium like this, you can't begin to produce something that you see. You can't reproduce it on paper. So it's the most frustrating thing in the world. Watercolor is all about using water and understanding kind of the properties of these pigments in the medium of water. Well, it took me, because I'm a dodo, it took me quite a while to figure that out. Like, okay, just play with the water, play with the paints, and then start to try to control it. Instead, I went full steam ahead and would look at these gorgeous Irish landscapes and want to just be able to recreate this. And it was a fool's errand. I should have just been playing with the paints at the beginning. But I do believe that many people stop once they become frustrated that first time. And I just plowed ahead.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. So you start painting in Ireland among many other painters. Did they give you advice? Did you seek advice?
The instructor, David, came around, and I think I was actually so bad that he didn't know where to begin.
Oh.
And so instead, I decided to play up my sense of color. And those early paintings, the first 2 or 3 months, I really played with very deep, vibrant colors and hues. And so I realized I couldn't make anything look realistic. So why not just blow it out of the water? So he would say, David would come, look over my shoulder and go, you really like color, don't you? And so the other people were so intent on doing their own paintings that I would just basically watch them paint and see how they use their brushes and see how they use their water. It was just such a new thing, and it was really fun to be immersed that way.
Yeah. And you know what? The thing about the arts or almost anything anybody tries, you have to be brave. You have to be brave to dare to try it.
That's true. And I think that many people, many people stop before they even start, you know, and then they'll stop after that first frustration sets in. And so this is something that I decided I just really wanted to give it a try. Plus, once I discovered all the supplies, which I love. I love the brushes. I love the little tubes of paint. I love the little tiny paint pans, you know, the little palettes. I love the paper. So I have amassed quite a collection of little things. I like to paint small for some reason. I paint on like 5x7 journals. So to me, that's the perfect size, and I'm not quite sure why.
Huh. What influenced your choice of watercolors? Was it because the people you were going to Ireland with were doing that, or had you always thought about it?
I'd never thought about doing watercolors, except my 92-year-old aunt, Aunt Millie, who passed away last week, unfortunately. She took up watercolors in her 70s, and she was really, really good. And the more I learn about watercolors, the more I realize how good she was. And I look at her stuff today and I'm just amazed at what she could produce. But
wow.
I loved looking at her paintings. I loved watching her work. And she's just was such an excellent drawer to start out with, you know, a draftsman. So she could draw anything. And so then to be able to play with the colors, and really she did a lot of realistic paintings, and they are wonderful.
Wow. Did you start with anything like drawing? Did you begin your work that way at all?
I do use a pencil to often sketch and stuff, and I've always liked to doodle. I didn't take an art class. Well, I did take an art class in college, and it was very funny because it was senior year. I took this painting class and acrylics, and I thought I was going to be so awesome. I couldn't wait to do this. I was sure my paintings would just be stunning. And I quickly realized that my tendency was to mix a lot of different colors together. So what I produced were various shades of mud on canvas.
I've seen those kinds of paintings.
Yes. But in my class, Lee Kino was in my class, and so of Antiques Roadshow. And so he was a hard act to follow because he was really good at it. So I would just look at other people's work, and I became an art aficionado. I decided that was my role.
Wow. That's quite amazing. Now, I know for your nonfiction books and your writing and so on, you do a lot of research. Are you finding yourself wanting to do research about the watercolors and some of the subjects that you're interested in?
That's a great question. And yes, I do approach it the same way. And so I have a big stack of books next to my desk, all different kinds of watercolor techniques, art books of watercolors that I love, you know, biographies of watercolorists who I really admire. I went to Maine and I saw Andrew Wyeth's home in Maine.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yeah, so I became really entranced with all of his work at the Farnsworth Museum. And, you know, he's the apex, of course, in the watercolor scene of a certain kind of watercolorist. Yeah. But it's really amazing to see some of his works in real life.
Yeah.
And to see the kind of care he took in doing things. And then, of course, his biography is just awesome because he was such an interesting and strange person.
So you're being influenced by the personality and the work, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, if there's a good personality behind the work, I'm always willing to try it then.
Yeah. That's a smart adage. What attracts you to certain subjects and light? And to tell us how you start out painting, wanting to paint something.
Okay, what I've really grabbed hold of lately, and I don't know if I'll ever get over this phase. This may be the phase I will always be in. I've started using ink, and I use these little Prisma pens. You know, they have very tiny nibs on them. And I love buildings. I've always loved buildings. I've always loved architecture. And I found a watercolorist online who lives in Australia, and her name is Liz Steele. And she does a number of online watercolor courses. And so I took one. And she was a former architect. And so she comes to this from an architectural background. And she's part of this movement that's now called Urban Sketchers.
Wow.
And so she goes on site, and she'll just, it's all about drawing what's in front of you, you know, painting or drawing what's in front of you.
But do you have to have a feeling for it? You know, so much painting looks like people's emotions to me.
Yes. Oh, I definitely think so. And as the more I look into various urban sketchers, and they're always of these buildings, always of buildings, you can see some people just love the fluid lines of some buildings. Other people do these like funny, hairy-looking lines, and you can totally tell their personalities from the way they're producing this. But what I love about Liz's stuff is that she's a really fast sketcher, and so I am trying to do that. And, you know, she looks at a building, she divides it up into these structural elements based on volume, kind of. And if you can see the volume and just kind of sketch out the basic shapes, then you can really then add in details. So it's like really you end up with something that just looks like the suggestion of the building in a way. So it's not necessarily accurate, but you know the building the second you see it.
Yeah.
You know it because the person has managed to capture the important parts.
I know you were a photographer, are a photographer as well. How much does light play on your watercolor adventures?
Well, after water and pigment, it is really all about light. And the thing about watercolor is it's this wonderful kind of translucent material, and you can put down layers upon layers and make really the suggestion of light just dance across your page. Trying to do water, literally paint water, is it's really tough, but it also has really made me appreciate how different shades of blues and greens and browns can mix together, and just how you can create this very layered and fascinating canvas.
Yeah, you know what? Watercolor to me has always felt like it offers the viewer more windows than
that's
oil
a great
painting.
Way to put it. Yes.
And so that's why I'm really sort of stuck on what kind of light are you
Absolutely.
Pursuing?
It does offer windows. And I think that, back to my buildings, what I love about them is I also love getting the proper perspective, but I also love shadow and light. And playing with the shadows and buildings really gives the work some volume. It's wonderful.
If you're just joining us, my guest is writer Rachel Dickinson, and we're discussing her new venture into watercolor painting. We're talking about how she began that and where she thinks it's going to go.
Hmm.
But before we do that, I want to ask you about the moments process. You take a brush, you start to paint, you finish it, and what do you do with it? Do you mull it? Do you change it? Do you immediately want to show it to somebody? How does that work?
Well, this morning I painted just a small picture of a cabin that was set in a deep woods, and I love being kind of lost in the process of painting this. I didn't use ink on this. I just sketched in the building, and then I really very carefully applied the paint. So it's more realistic than a lot of my stuff looks. And when I finished, I looked at it and I thought, where are my shadows? You know, it's like I'm learning to really look for things. And it's like, oh, that tree looks a little flat. I need to figure out how to make that look more three-dimensional. And
more alive, right?
Yeah, so it's just learning. I no longer just accept something when I'm done. I actually now look at it and say, well, I could actually make this better by doing X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a process of having stuck to it for about a year.
Yeah. I've often wondered how people apply what they see into their hands so that they can. I mean, that's the mystery
the
of it, isn't
mystery,
it?
Mystery, Tish.
Yeah, it
now,
is.
Now, if we could figure that out, we could all do that. But no, that's the part.
But are you happy with what, you know, I mean, does it look like what you saw most of the time or not?
Sometimes it does. I think that I'm learning to train my brain more than my hand, and I think I'm learning to change my expectations. and change what I think is important in what I'm seeing. So I'm starting to focus in on different things. Before I walked into the studio, I took a walk down the street and took photos of the two big churches at the end of this block. And like, I can't wait to get home to draw them and start painting them, because I just, you know, just it's for me, it's shape. And so instead of looking at a flower or a flower garden, I'm not that interested in trying to paint those now, because that's a different kind of fussiness that I'm not ready to do. Instead, I just want to take on the architecture.
Do you always paint from a photograph or from something sitting before you, or do you ever paint through your imagination?
Never paint out of my head, no. I really want a guide. I want something in front of me. If it can't be in person, then it's a photo. And I have a friend on Instagram who takes photos of these old buildings in her town in Kentucky. And I got in touch with her, and I said, do you mind if I paint some of these? And she was thrilled that I would want to do it. And so she has a way of being able to kind of transfer the life of this old building in her photography. And so I see that. I'm very drawn to that. And it's like, what is it about this building and what she's seeing about this building through the angle she's shooting it or the time of day? What is it that is really appeals to me? And I try to do the same in my painting.
Wow. You know, I want to ask you this too, because you have been a writer for so many years. How is writing and painting in some ways similar, and does it tap different emotions in you, obviously different urges to communicate? Tell us about that process.
When I started painting, because I couldn't write, I thought, well, at least I'm doing something creative. And that made me feel better, like I was, okay, wherever the creative part lies in your brain will not wither, you know, if I keep doing it. The more I've painted and the more I've read about creativity, in both in artistic creativity and writing, they come from different places.
Oh, yeah, I would assume.
Yeah, so I didn't really think that, maybe because I always thought writing was kind of like magic for me. It was like you research it, but then there's the magic in writing the sentence. So I assumed they came from a similar place, you know, but they don't. And so, but something about doing the painting has brought me back to writing, which is really nice.
Oh, that's
so
remarkable.
Now I'm doing both.
Wow. Well, what do you think it was that urged you on?
I think I needed to give myself a rest. I honestly do. I had never not been able to write. And so it was such a shock, and it was so disconcerting. And I think I then needed to take a big step back and just build up whatever was lacking at that moment and just build it back up.
Do you feel like you're using different parts of your brain when you paint? I mean, obviously, there was that book about on the right side of your brain, or creating on the left side of your brain, those kinds of books. Did you feel a difference?
I don't feel a difference when I'm doing it, except, you know, the one thing I do notice, and I know this certainly has to do with how my brain works and firing the synapses, I've gotten much better at controlling a brush. So there's, you know, just one, it's something about accuracy, and I don't know if I've become a better typist now.
But what about the control of emotions? It seems to me that one has to write or paint or do anything creative.
Well, for me, I feel like I do. I do have to do something. And it's even hard to take time to read right now because I just want to do these other things. So, and now I've been writing essays, and I've also been painting. Well, you asked if I ever painted something out of my brain. Well, I guess I am, because I've been painting these maps used in a very, not in a literal way, but kind of more of a metaphoric way. I've been painting maps that kind of accompany these essays. So,
wow, just a new way to express yourself.
Yeah, it really is.
I sense there are going to be some drawings in your next nonfiction book.
I think something might happen. We're hoping.
Do you think of painting as fiction or nonfiction? Do you designate it in that way at all?
Interesting, because I've been doing creative nonfiction, so I think the line between fiction
and nonfiction is slightly blurry. I think that I push up against that line. You know, nonfiction is about telling the truth. And creative nonfiction is about applying fiction techniques to telling the truth. Mm. But there are people who are real strict constructionists. Like, if I weren't out that day and I didn't feel the weather, then I can't report on it. Well,
yeah.
I might do a little research, find out what the weather was like, and write about it. But so I feel like it's very my creative writing, nonfiction, creative nonfiction pushes against the line, and the paintings also push against that same line. My buildings are not strict representations of the buildings I see in the photographs. They're my interpretation. And if I feel like maybe not, you know, including that window because I don't like it, I don't put it in.
Are you showing it to people besides on Facebook? And early on, were you saying, do I dare do this? Should I open myself up to the vulnerable reviews?
I have an incredibly thick skin, and I feel blessed because I have a thick skin. Like, my words, I don't care. You can pull stuff apart. It does not bother me. Showing people my paintings, early on, I would get these really looks that were almost pitying, like, oh, does she realize how bad that is?
Are you serious?
No, I could see this look behind the eyes. But I show my work to whoever is around. Sure, I have no problem doing that because I see it as part of the process. I put stuff on Facebook, but I love Instagram for both my photographs and for my paintings. And I will always put them up on Instagram because there are other sketchers who do the same thing. And I love looking at their work, so I figure I should be putting my stuff up as well.
Do you think going on this painting venture has opened you up as a writer? Or has it not affected you at all? It seems to me it would be opening different windows in some ways.
Well, I certainly, because it is a creative venture and because I view my writing as creative, I like to believe that it has. But really, when I have looked at the brain science and the neurobiology of what is happening when you're either painting or writing, they really are not from the same place. There are some overlaps. But it's fascinating. The more we learn about the brain, the more we realize that we know nothing. So I think just doing something with my mind and my hands, sure, makes me want to continue to do it. It's like the kid who's really busy and is taking all these courses and is doing sports and is then doing singing and theater. Those kids excel because they're packing all this stuff in. I feel like I'm doing the same thing. I'm just packing my days with this stuff.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. I mean, so many people just stay stuck, right?
Yes.
Where they were, and it's comfortable, and I'm getting published, for instance.
Right.
And then they just stay where they were. So humankind started out with cave paintings. Do you feel like painting is a little bit more natural process for you?
I think humans also started out with communication, mm-hmm. and the writing is just a form of communication, as is the painting, as are the paintings. I love those cave paintings. They're just incredible.
Oh, they are.
And I don't know if I find one more, valid than the other. They're just expressions. And I just feel fortunate that I'm able to express myself in more than one medium, which is really what it comes down to.
Yeah. It is. It sounds selfish, but it is for you first.
Yeah. It really is.
The notion and the experience.
Plus, most of my paintings are done in little journals. And so it's not like I'm going to cut it out and, you know, put it in a frame. They're in these little journals, the same way a lot of my writing. When I was a travel writer, I kept little journals that I would take on my journeys, and I would write in them every morning. And they contain these wonderful stories and observations, and there they are. They're in my journals.
Yeah. Have you... Have you thought, like many writers do, to join a group, join a writing circle to get feedback and encouragement?
Mm-hmm. I am going to the Adirondacks in a couple of weeks with a group of watercolorists. And I'm really looking forward to it because I don't know any of these people. So it's a bunch of strangers, and some of them are really, really good. So this is where I always want to be in a group where there are people who are very eager to show their work and who are very serious about what they're doing. I feel that way about writing, like a writing group and an art group. I want serious people.
Yeah, and you also need to be somebody who's not afraid to show it and to get a little criticism, constructive or otherwise.
And like I said, you can't hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
Try as you might.
Because you're creating this stuff in the world, so of course you want to show it in the world, it seems to me. Did you think you'll segue into oils or any other mediums?
Oh, it's so messy. Oh, my God.
That's the reason?
You need, like, I don't know what, linseed oil, eggs, whatever. It's like, when I think of that, I think of, Vermeer. No, I can't imagine doing that right now. No.
Really?
I really just like where I am, and I just really want to try to perfect whatever I see coming next in watercolors.
So your paintings are quite small. Do you think you'll ever have a show? There are a lot of galleries in the area.
What would they have to do? They'd have to, like...
They'd have to give people magnifying glasses and binoculars.
Maybe my paintings will get smaller and smaller, and then they'll just be freakish. And then, of course, I'd do something like that. No, you know what I've thought of doing is actually making just a series of note cards just to see what it would look like.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, just...
But I have seen many painters, had many on the show, and have friends who've gone from small venues...
Right.
Big, large canvases. And, it's like something awakens in them, they say. So,
I know. Yeah. I know. Who knows? I might even go as large as 8x10. Frightening.
That would be huge.
Yes, for me.
do you think this is going to be a long-term project? Do you have any idea whether it's going to be as serious as you're writing?
I think it will be, because when I look at my Aunt Millie and the fact that she did it for 20 years at the end of her life, it's like I see going that route. Absolutely.
Great. Well, I hope you do.
Thanks.
We're almost out of time, Rachel Dickinson, so give us some contact information and give us your website.
Oh, my website is really just for writing, and that's racheldickinson.com. But if you do want to see some of the artwork, follow me on Instagram. Just type in my name, Rachel Dickinson, or Geology26, which is the handle I go by on Instagram. And you'll see a lot of paintings.
Well, great. Well, Rachel Dickinson, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with this new venture. I think you're well on your way to a great success.
Well, thank you.
I'm very impressed.
Thanks.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.